The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I'm prepared to do anything I can
well,
to
play the
country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should it be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
So welcome along to the Football Show. Joe Molloy here alongside Kieran Cunningham from the Irish Daily Star. Later on we will hear from Raphael Honigstein. We'll do a little Bundesliga check-in. And not least to hear about young Haaland, Erling Haaland, who scored a hat-trick on his debut. You may have seen that. Although weirdly the Germans don't count it as a hat-trick. Raphael Honigstein will explain all. So that's on the way, and in the meantime we should talk about, well, what is a developing story at Old Trafford, if you're Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It's just gone half-time. It is 1-0 to Burnley. We will bring you Peter Smith's half-time report in just a second. Wood with the goal. Elsewhere tonight, Leicester 2-1 up on West Ham. They took a 2-0 lead, Leicester, through Barnes and Pereira. Mark Noble has scored a penalty on 50 minutes to give West Ham a sniff of a point. 73 minutes gone in that game. And then Jose against Norwich, bottom of the table, Norwich at home. Dele Alli scores in 38 minutes. Young Pukki comes through on 70 minutes with a penalty to make it 1-1. So Jose is 1-1 against Norwich and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is 1-0 against Burnley. Is there a post-Alex Ferguson curse? Anyone who goes near that job ends up in a bad way. United, ironically, Kieran, we were watching it here and they started well and they were moving the ball with a bit of speed and a bit of purpose and looked okay, yeah, but didn't convert.
No, and like 20 minutes ago I was saying that probably United looked like they'd win by a couple of goals, but then yet again they weren't able to defend a high ball into the box, which has been a problem for them all season, particularly for set pieces. This was from a free kick rather than a corner kick this time. But like you were just watching Solskjaer come off again, you know, walking off the pitch at half time, and you kind of feel sorry for him because he just seems to be on the edge of disaster all the time. That, you know, even when they have a good result, it's generally followed up by a bad one. And it just seems to be, he's not getting any, other than that run when he first came in and they had whatever, 10, 12 games in a row, they did well. It's been up and down, up and down, up and down constantly with more downs than ups. And it's just a reflection of the very strange season it's been that they're still so close to the top four. Like Chelsea, his form has been in free fall, but still the gap has been more or less the same. I think it's been 5 points between them and fifth for about 2 months, which is very unusual. Yeah. But
six as things stand.
Six as things stand, yeah. And it's, I don't know, like that argument between Jamie Carragher and Roy Keane over Solskjaer was quite interesting because...
Sorry, touching on it in Monday's paper, yeah.
Yeah, because I get the impression often of Roy Keane and Graham Souness that they're not really fond of modern footballers, and they have a lot of sympathy for managers, that they think players have to shoulder a lot of the blame, and that managers, it's kind of a thankless task they have a lot of the time. And you can argue, like, he hasn't been there very long, but at the same time, if he hadn't played for Manchester United, there's not a chance in hell that Solskjaer, with his CV, which is relegated with Cardiff City, winning Norwegian leagues, would get the job at one of the biggest clubs in the world, if not the biggest club.
It's not a rational decision.
No, it's not. It's a sentimental decision. It's like if Liverpool give... If Jurgen Klopp's successor at Liverpool is Steven Gerrard, it won't be a rational decision. Even if he wins a couple of... Scottish titles with Rangers, it's still not enough to prove you can manage Liverpool. Like, Jurgen Klopp had won two Bundesligas. He'd gone to a Champions League final with Borussia Dortmund. So
if Gerrard won a few Scottish titles, or even if he did, even if he just kept going as he was, you would still maybe say there's more of an argument for him getting the Liverpool job than Solskjaer. That's low Solskjaer's career was hanging on. And so he's had the Liverpool game. And the fallout from that, I mean, different people think the gulf was bigger here or there, or that United were okay or not okay, but regardless, certainly a reminder of where they are. And then you've got the "you ruined Marcus Rashford" thing going on.
Yeah.
Ian Wright on BBC saying he's put himself ahead of, you know, Rashford, and he's mistreated Rashford, and he has to defend that. And then you've Mino Raiola today, we'll play it later on, saying, like, Pogba, I mean, United need to get their house in order if Pogba's going to stay, really.
Yeah.
And now you're 1-0 down at halftime to Burnley. You're definitely having a moment as you walk down the tunnel just now going, This is not good.
No, absolutely. And I read an interesting stat earlier that if you look at what you'd regard as United's strongest first 11 and compared to the other strongest first 11 of the top six clubs, like Liverpool, more or less, he will play his strongest team. He plays them very regularly, Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah.
He might change one body midfield, but the back five is virtually all the same. The front three is always the same.
And Henderson's generally.
Yeah.
And that's nine.
Yeah, there are very few injuries. Mm. Well, they've had injuries. Like they've had quite a lot of injuries, but not to the main men. But United now have only had their first 11 for 22% of the games. And the average with the other top six clubs is 66, and that does raise questions about United behind the scenes with their medical team and their training and everything else, because it's so out of kilter that you would have to think something is unusual.
Well, I thought that's an interesting point, because I was listening, I can't quite remember who, but I was listening to a podcast last week and they were making the point that when Van Gaal arrived at the club, he certainly let it be known to people that he was quite surprised at how backward the Manchester United medical department had been allowed to go, because obviously Carrington is state of the art by all accounts, and I mean Ferguson would certainly almost have it be said that, well, we put great stock on scouting, which certainly aged and dated the scouting system, like his brother Martin being scout for a long time, but also the medical department. But Van Gaal actually thought it was a bit backward and tried to improve things. Now, to what extent it has been improved under the Glazers, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the injuries are definitely a factor. Does Solskjaer really know the best 11? Does anyone really know the best 11? They've never got any rhythm, certainly this season with it, you know?
Yeah.
So I should mention, Jose Mourinho has stuffed my words down my throat. 2-1 Spurs now. Son with the goal on 79 minutes, so 2-1. What are you making of Mourinho at Spurs these days? Enough said.
What do I make of it? I don't think they're going anywhere. Like they're good. They're going to be good enough to be a top four team in different seasons. Not every season, I think, because of the competition.
Mm. This season was an opportunity missed.
Yeah,
for sure.
But you know, you do see Leicester have got stronger, Wolves have got stronger. You know, you have United, you have Chelsea, you have Arsenal. You know, so you have obviously City and Liverpool. So there's a lot of competition to make top four. He might win a League Cup and an FA Cup some season, but there's no chance of him winning a big prize. No, he's not. And the big prizes are always what energised him. And Tottenham's chance is gone. Like Tottenham had a window.
Yeah.
Where, you know, when Leicester won it, for example, like that season was a huge opportunity.
They blew up towards the end.
Yeah, for Tottenham, because where the others were. But you look now how Liverpool have kicked on, where City are now. I can't see how they're ever going to get that kind of opportunity again. And, you know, you would expect Arsenal to improve significantly as well. You know, it might take time, but, you know, they are. You know, they're so dependent. Like Mourinho's way is a dated way, you know. It's still effective, but it's not. You watch his teams and you watch a Klopp team or a Guardiola team, you know, and it's night and day. It just seems like 20th century football now. Mm. It hasn't kicked on. Like there's even the lack of pace, and you know, there's just a kind of a lethargy to his methods, and even his act now seems a bit tired. You know,
I know.
You know, I don't think like the Troy Parrott thing, like playing him would be completely alien to Mourinho. Like it's never been his way. Like, and people can bring up saying, "Oh, but he played this young player here or there," but he has occasionally. But generally, he doesn't trust them, and you know. I would have been astonished that if he had played Parrott regularly. Like now you do look like Damien Delaney. I think you'll mention this after a while.
Yeah,
like Damien doesn't think it'd be a good idea to go out and loan, but I can't see, he's basically going to be, if he stays at Tottenham, he'd just be playing under 23s for a couple of years, I think. Like he's 18 shortly in a couple of weeks. Like people keep saying 70, but he's very close to 18. It's not unusual for 18-year-olds to be playing now. So.
No. Now he did say to me, I thought what he actually said was okay, where he said, look, Troy will get minutes.
Yeah.
He'll get minutes. He's just not ready to lead the line. And it's kind of hard to argue that an 18-year-old with that kind of pressure.
Yeah, I think, absolutely, I agree with that. And the little glimpses we've seen, you know, he hasn't set the world alight. Like, it's only...
It's not Michael Owen here.
No, I think he is a guy who's going to go places, but, you know, you have to give him time and Tottenham are chasing the top four, so it is a gamble. Like it's easier to throw him in with 50 minutes to go. Mm-hmm. After a while, but loan moves are often the making of players, though.
Like, Harry Kane.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's been a goal between Leicester and West Ham. Yeah, let's go to Derek Clark.
Leicester City 3, West Ham United 1. The Foxes score from the penalty spot from Ayoze Perez. He sends Darren Randolph the wrong way. The penalty was initially given, but Ian Ashworth was upended by Ogbonna. West Ham wanted to go to the VAR call. The referee, David Coote, said no. And up stepped Perez to send Randolph the wrong way and make it Leicester City 3, West Ham 1.
There we go. So 3-1 Leicester, Spurs still 2-1 up Norwich, and Manchester United 0. Burnley 1 is the halftime scoreline if you're just joining us. Harry Maguire let Wood just come across him and he hooked a ball into the top corner. Let's go to Raphael Honigstein, standing by from The Athletic. Hi, Raphael.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for joining us. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Bundesliga, where Leipzig are 4 points clear of Bayern, and we certainly want to get your thoughts and early impressions of Erling Haaland. But first, I know you were at Chelsea and Arsenal last night. Where are these two?
I mean, they are where they are on the table. I mean, Arsenal are in team in transition, a club in transition. Chelsea slightly more together, working from a higher base, but with a manager who is a bit inexperienced and was having a hard time hiding his frustrations. I was feeling that I might detect this very good player syndrome that sometimes managers get, where they're a little bit upset and unhappy that the players that they're working with now are perhaps not quite the same quality that they themselves were as players or they themselves had around them at the time when they were playing. And I don't think that Lampard was slamming them to throw them under a bus and to really get rid of them, but he just couldn't help himself but being very disappointed with some of the stuff he saw there. Arteta was the other way around, bigging up all the positives, working with what is not a very, useful or complete side, but trying to improve them, trying to make everyone a little bit better, a little bit more confident. And he took that result as a sign of going in the right direction for Chelsea was the other way around.
And Rafa, was it Lampard's body language on the touchline or was it something he said at full time in the press conference?
It was at the press conference. The way he phrased things, he said, for example, he was really disappointed to see the right back rolling a goal in with no one challenging. He said, when you can do as much as you want and practice, but then when people don't do what they're supposed to do, when they defend corners, it's really difficult, or when they do something different to the stuff that we told them to do. So it's quite damning. Mm. But again, I don't think he was trying to necessarily, destroy these players. I think at that moment, he just couldn't really hide his real anger and his real frustration. Of course, the buck stops with the manager and you have to, point fingers at him and say, why isn't he doing better? But I think he really felt at that moment that, I'm working with players who are not quite as good as I was or as good as the players were when I was playing, and it's frustrating me.
Mm. What about Arteta's Arsenal then as he begins to get his feet under the table? Is there any real discernible change or imprint? Like if I flicked on and didn't know that Unai Emery had been replaced, would I think something was up?
To an extent, I think you see a slightly different body language. I think players look happier. I think they are more in tune of what the coach is trying to do. With Emery, confusion reigned towards the end of his period there. People just didn't understand him, literally. They didn't know what it was he wanted them to do. And as a result, they ran around and it was all pretty chaotic, combined with a pretty low ceiling for some of them. Now, that still is the problem. You're still not going to get very far, I think, with the centre-back pairing of Mustafi and David Luiz. But what you can do is make the people around you work harder, try to protect the back four a bit more, make the people not lose their head, make them not go and completely fall apart when they go behind. And they got a little bit lucky in terms of the chances they created. But at the same time, you felt that they frustrated Chelsea. And with 10 men, they stuck true to their a new identity. I mean, there's something that I think Guardiola said a few years ago when he was at Bayern. He said, when you go down to 10 men, that's when you actually see a team's real character. And he doesn't mean it necessarily in the mentality sense or attitude, but actually tactically and in terms of quality, what a team can do with one player down. Arsenal didn't just defend. They didn't just sit back and wait. They tried to play football. They tried to keep the ball. And I think that was, at least from Arteta's point of view, from his vantage point, taking over this completely demoralized side, a sign that things are slowly but surely moving in the right direction.
Let's turn to Germany then. So Haaland's really incredible debut for Dortmund, coming on after 23 minutes. They had trailed 3-1 and he scores in the 59th, 70th, 79 minutes. One of the goals was a tap-in, the other two really impressive and promising finishes. Can we start with the most ridiculous aspect of this? And I really don't know how I've never heard this before.
I've never heard that. I was baffled by
this. The most extraordinary thing. So Haaland scored the three goals in the game and somehow you Germans don't think it's a hat-trick.
What can I tell you? Don't shoot the messenger here. I've been arguing against this very strict definition of a hat-trick for years, but every time I run into the establishment, as it were, certainly vast sections of the media just not considering it a proper hat-trick. They sometimes will write hat-trick, but then in brackets, not proper.
Really? Has it always been the case in Germany? Was that always the way, really?
It's been like this for decades. Right. They expect somebody to score in a single half and with no one interrupting those three goals.
Yeah.
Unless you do that, there's always someone who's casting aspersion on your version of the hat-trick. So I think I get a sense that maybe attitudes are softening somewhat, but we're still not at the stage where hat-trick is just a hat-trick. We still, for some, whatever reason, like to distinguish between proper and improper ones.
And do you get the match ball for a hat-trick in Germany?
Well, I mean, there are many match balls these days.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If a player wants to grab one, I don't think anyone's going up to him and said, this is not a proper hat-trick. Haaland certainly did not care and probably did not know either. So he was very happy with a match ball, and I don't think that anyone from the Bundesliga would try to get that ball back from him.
Mm. And what's the strongest argument someone makes when it's pointed out that a football match lasts 90 minutes?
Meaning?
Why 45? You only have 45 to score a hat-trick. Why don't you get the length of a game?
I don't know. I can't tell you where this comes from. I mean, people don't know exactly where hat-trick comes from either, right? I mean, there's theories what it actually means and where it comes from, but it somehow has become a convention. I couldn't tell you why. I've tried, as I said, for decades now to convince people.
It's been your life's work, Rafa.
Well, I have to. One of my life's works is to convince Germans that the club is not called Arsenal London. Because they're convinced that's what they're called. I'm still trying. With the hat-trick, I'm thinking I'm making some inroads, but still not enough as I'd like to be.
It would never have occurred to me to ask, do they have a different perception of a hat-trick? So are there any other quirks in German football that would astonish us?
I'm not sure. I mean, for me, it's probably, I can't see the wood for the trees. It's also part of my intrinsic footballing upbringing. I have to think about it. I mean, what we used to do, I mean, if you were English, I'd say one of the quirks is that we win stuff, but it doesn't quite have the same resonance if I say it to you.
You're just picking on, I mean, with England, it's kind of funny. You're just picking on us. We're
exactly
doing
I wouldn't
our best.
Want to do that.
No. So Haaland's hat-trick dispute aside, he came on 19 years of age and scored the hat-trick or didn't, but scored the three goals, certainly. Has scored, eight goals in six Champions League games as well. This guy really does look like the real deal, Rafa. I mean, I know you made the point in your piece in The Athletic that the last player to score a debut on his hat-trick for Dortmund was Aubameyang, who really, you know, is an excellent player. But it looks even like Haaland will scale greater heights.
I think it's very possible. Of course, Dortmund have done whatever they can to, on the one hand, play up this deal, and they're very proud and they consider it a coup. You know, here is us, Dortmund, getting the better of the likes of Man United and even RB Leipzig, who might not have the same cachet, but were probably in the driving seat because of their connections with RB Salzburg for natural reasons. At the same time, they want to underplay the importance and the expectations that might arise from this deal. But it didn't do a very good job because he basically came on and smashed up all doubts and all worries about him perhaps needing a bit of time to adjust and to adapt. I can't think of a more sort of dominant and symbolic performance than this one. You know, 19-year-old kid, first game in the league, first game as a substitute coming on late on, and also turning the game around. I mean, it's one thing to score a hat-trick like Aubameyang did when they destroyed Augsburg in August 2013, a Dortmund team that were runners-up in the Champions League at the height of their powers, you might say. This Dortmund team are full of doubt. They went into the winter break thinking, hopefully we can turn things around. Hopefully we can defend better. They're 3-1 down just after halftime. And this guy smashes up the results, smashes up the narrative in a way. And now Dortmund are 5-3 winners. I'm thinking maybe we can win the league after all because we've got Erik Haaland. So in terms of the impact, in terms of his own sort of personal statement, it was an unbelievable debut.
Ravia, what do you mean by a symbolic impact? Is it that straight away he's announcing this is a new Dortmund?
Well, ideally, yes. But what I mean is, the discussion after a defeat at Augsburg would have all been about Favre's inability to defend. And I think it might have come very close to the point where Dortmund, even though they don't have a replacement, would have said, you know what, we cannot go on like this. I mean, this is a team that got 30 points in the first half of the season with this squad. If they were to double that, go to 60, not only will that not be enough to win the title, which was their stated ambition, but it probably won't be enough to make the Champions League, which would be an absolute disaster for Dortmund. So he changed the dynamic of their season, at least of this spell in the season, by turning the game around, changed the dynamic about how Favre is being seen, at least for the time being. But of course, also for himself. I mean, Dortmund were so proud of having this kid. It's a sort of bittersweet deal because they know he's probably not going to stay around forever. He does have a release clause kicking in a couple of years' time. Mino Raiola is who he is. You have to go to bed with the devil, somebody said to me. This is the kind of things you have to do if you want Erling Haaland to play for you, at least if it's for 2 or 3 years. So for him to, have all these things sort of in the background and still come up with such a devastating performance was just out of the ordinary, and not just a debut, not just a normal sort of amazing way to announce yourself in the league.
Mm. I saw Marco Reus was saying, really, it's the best thing we've seen since Lewandowski. So I'm sure someone is rushing over to tell him never to say this again out loud. keep play it cool for a minute.
Slightly misquoted. He said, we haven't seen this type of player since Lewandowski. So okay. I think the point he was trying to make was more of a tactical one. Okay. And this is another thing I could have mentioned. There is this big debate about Favre not really playing centre forwards. They tried to buy a centre forward, and in brackets, basically Favre said to them, you can, but I don't really want to play him. So there is this struggle within the club as well, who they feel we need an Erling Haaland, and maybe Favre 6 months ago felt, you know what, I'm happy with my little number nines and with Paco Alcácer, a different type of striker. And what's different, I think, is if you allow me that pun, sometimes or often, managers try to develop players. He might be the first player to develop a manager. At least that's what the club are hoping, that Favre will become more direct, that Dortmund will be a bit more vertical, and the way he has played, I think it's going to be very hard for Favre to leave him out.
Mm, he may well have forced the issue right from the off. And just one other point, I take your point about their style of play, but did a move to Dortmund to you make sense? Obviously, Haaland has a whole football network to call on and to advise him. It's certainly, without knowing that about the style of play, I must confess, but certainly on the face of it, going to a club like Dortmund, high profile, admittedly, present struggles aside, often in the Champions League, where he'll get first team football more than likely, I thought, well, what a shrewd move for a 19-year-old, and he'll be on his way, age 22, somewhere big. Is that the general perception?
I think so. I mean, what they could offer, what no one else could at that moment, was to say, you're going to be our leading striker. You know, Leipzig's deal was, you have Nagelsmann, one of the best coaches. You have a team that can win the league this year, that can go far in the Champions League as well. But you will play next to Timo Werner, which is not bad, of course, and you score lots of goals that way. But at Dortmund, the need was more pressing. I think he'll get more support. But I think what really got him, this is what I heard from people close to him in Norway, even though it sounds, you can be a little bit cynical and you may be thinking this is just a story, but apparently the emotional pull of playing in front of those 80,000, playing for the first time in his life for a proper football club with real resonance and emotions, probably more so than Leipzig, I think it's fair to say. Mm. I think that might have just made the difference. And Favre, you know, might not have been a selling point. It might have actually been a case where they've said to him, you know what, Favre might not be around for that much longer, but you will be our leading striker for years to come. And we've got all, everybody else, Roy, Sancho, all these guys playing for you. And I think it was enough for him to see that this is not a bad move.
Okay. Before you go, the Bundesliga generally, as you said, Leipzig have a chance to win the league. They're on 40 points after 18 matches. Bayern are on 36 points after 18 matches. So 4 points, obviously, far from an insurmountable lead. What are we looking at here for the closing months?
Well, I mean, Bayern have been weak, and when Bayern are weak historically, then the league opens up. This year, it seems more open before than before because you still can't quite rule out Dortmund, and even Schalke and Gladbach are doing fairly well. But it's a case, I think, of Leipzig and Bayern ultimately. They seem to have a little bit more, more stability. They defend better than anyone else. They score more goals than anyone else. And they have this quite remarkable depth in their squads. I mean, Leipzig, you know, you look around how they dealt with the Champions League. They have real quality throughout the team. They can leave out the likes of Upamecano, one of the best up-and-coming young centre-backs, and it hardly registers because they've got Mukiele and Orban and all these other kids. And it doesn't seem to matter so much. So Bayern and Leipzig, I think, will go possibly all the way, but it still leaves it open for one or two of the other guys to come in. And it is easily the most exciting league. And what just to conclude, what I think what is exciting this year especially is that after the departure of Klopp and Tuchel, you, for the first time in three or four years, you have the sense again that this has some outstanding managers in Marco Rose, in David Wagner, in Julian Nagelsmann, maybe Hansi Flick one day. It's too early to say, but guys that are really beginning to become proper superstar coaches, maybe in 3 or 4 years down the line. And then the Bundesliga now, and the influence is being felt in a very positive way.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly seems to be a hotbed for brilliant emerging managerial talent. Apologies if during your answer there you heard some intake of breath here and some puffing of cheeks, because Jay Rodriguez has just scored one of the greatest goals Jay Rodriguez will ever score for Burnley against Manchester United to go 2-0 up. So we were trying to digest that. Underside of the crossbar, brilliant goal. And the camera obviously cut into Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So that's what was going on there, Rafa, during your answer.
Okay.
Listen, thanks so much for joining us. Keep up the good work with the Athletic. Thanks, Rafa.
Have a nice evening. Bye.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Rafael Honigstein there, whose work you can read in The Athletic. Whose work can't you read in The Athletic?
Yeah, yeah. I eventually got around to subscribing over Christmas because they had yet another very good offer, and I thought, and there's loads of great stuff. Like, it doesn't do match reports and all that, but that doesn't bother me because you get that stuff everywhere, but it does really good in-depth stuff.
It does, in fairness. I think I got an offer for the year for €25.
Yeah, it was something like that. It was nothing.
I was just thinking it probably works out. Let's hear about the goal at Old Trafford. Peter Smith.
Manchester United 0, Burnley 2, and an absolute wonder goal from Jay Rodriguez, who played a 1-2 just on the left side of the United area, and then sent a rising left-footed shot crashing in off the underside of the crossbar. Manchester United 0, Burnley 2.
Dear, oh dear, ridiculous strike. We'll take a short ad break, and then we'll give you full times in just a moment from the other games.
Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Geoff and Heskey.
Welcome back. Joe Malloy and Kieran Cunningham here on The Football Show. So let's bring you some full times from the games which kicked off at 7:30. Let's start with Spurs. They were at home to Norwich this evening. Nigel Bidmead.
Tottenham 2, Norwich 1. This was a hard-fought victory with the winner coming against the run of play 10 minutes from the end. Spurs scored their first goal of the year on 38 when Aurier crossed for Dele Alli to finish from close range. Norwich levelled on 68 when Timo Pukki converted a penalty after Max Aarons was brought down. Then, just as the crowd were getting frustrated, Son, on the line, headed home a deflected Alli cross. Spurs 2, Norwich 1.
That leaves Spurs level on points with Manchester United, although United do have a game in hand. Meanwhile, Norwich are bottom of the table, 6 points adrift even of second from bottom, so they are probably done, you would have to say, this season. Meanwhile, the other game this evening, Leicester against West Ham. Derek Clark was there.
Full-time Leicester City 4, West Ham United 1. The Foxes get back to winning ways. Harvey Barnes and Ricardo gave them a deserved two-goal cushion at the break at the expense of injuries to Nampalis Mendy and Jamie Vardy. Mark Noble reduced the deficit from the penalty spot before the home side restored their two-goal advantage with a penalty of their own on 81 minutes. Jose Perez sending Darren Randolph the wrong way. Perez adding his second late on to cap a fine evening for Brendan Rodgers' men. It's finished Leicester City 4, West Ham 1.
There we are. And the other game finished. Oh, well, the other game is the United game. So let's check in with Peter Smith at Old Trafford. 63 minutes on the clock.
Manchester United 0, Burnley 2. And the frustration for United continues as they struggle to make any impression against a resolute Burnley defence, with the away team doubling their tally with a J. Rodriguez wonder goal as the Burnley striker played a neat 1-2 on the left of the box before sending a stunning left-footed shot crashing in off the underside of the crossbar. This the third consecutive time that Burnley have gone 2 up at Old Trafford, but they haven't won one yet. Manchester United 0, Burnley 2.
Right, that's some stat. It was quite a hard, it was surreal actually. Surreal is the word, listening to Rafa concentrating on his answer. And you saw, well, that's a good touch by Rodriguez. Yeah. And then he's going to shoot. And then it seemed to take a long time to get there. Yeah. And then on the side of the crossbar, you know, like if you're Solskjaer, you're thinking, well, bloody hell, how often are you going to do that in your life? Thanks very much.
Yeah, no, it's just everything that could go wrong is going wrong for him at the moment, isn't it? It's, I don't know. Like, are they... There's no sign of them losing faith. Like, there was talk a few months ago, wasn't there? But
they seem to have decided to say we're not going to be a sacking club or a chopping and changing club. But as we've said a few times, they've picked an interesting character to wed themselves to.
Yeah, like the logic behind this is, I wonder will anybody ever explain it? You know, what the thinking was. Like, it, you know, as an interim appointment, it made some kind of sense, but they read too much into 2 months.
Think of Rio and BT waving the paper saying, sign him up.
I know, yeah.
Oh, every
Gary Neville kissing him, hugging him after the PSG win.
The joke was, you know, how much do you want? Where do you want your statue?
Yeah.
You know, this was everybody who was anybody. And maybe that's why some of these pundits are a bit sheepish now to turn.
Yeah.
Was saying he has to get the job. Sign him up. Robbie Savage recorded a video of him at home on his rowing machine screaming at the phone to say, sign Solskjaer up.
Because, like, when you look at it, like, when Klopp came in, it didn't work instantly.
No.
Because it took time, because he came into a poor situation. But Klopp had a track record that you thought he probably would be able to turn it around.
Yes.
Which is, I know what happens in Spain. Like, you will look at Barcelona and Real Madrid have had managers with very little experience and they don't last very long sometimes, you know. Sometimes it works out like Guardiola or Zidane. Mm. But with United, there's different kinds of pressure there. I think there's... you need to be on it from the start and you know, you don't get a honeymoon, really.
Not especially.
You know,
they're a pretty good fan base, certainly in Old Trafford, and they're turning anyone and welcome Mourinho back. But patience has been tested here, and the empty seats we mentioned in the previous era, by the way,
it's
more empty seats than you would think usually at Old Trafford. But there's even more again now. Fans have definitely kind of packed up.
Yeah, like there's it's a massive ground in terms of capacity. Like it holds what 25,000 more than Anfield, for example, but. It's very dated.
It's got a lot
of problems, you know, and that's that feeling of decay is all around the club now, that just things have been let slip. And it's not for want of spending they have spent the guts of €1 billion on players since Alex Ferguson left. And I think it's just too easy to blame Ed Woodward all the time, which is, you know, it's the default position with ex-players and with a lot of supporters that it's all Ed Woodward's fault. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, you know? It's an interesting point. Mark Ogden tweeted yesterday that Woodward, the share price has gone up $5 in the last year or so. And he was, you know, always saying Woodward's the safest man in Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Just to finish off on the United theme, I mean, obviously we're talking about them. I think some listeners last night were saying, can you stop talking about Man United? I get that. I do get that. They're playing this evening. But also one other thing, the Paul Pogba situation continues. So Mino Raiola, the man himself, he was in Sky Sports earlier today, obviously Haaland's agent as well. So Pogba's obviously out with an ankle injury. And here we'll start with this. Raiola asked if he expects the French midfielder to stay with Manchester United.
I expect my players to be happy and I expect the clubs to be happy. That's my work. So I don't want to walk in front of what will be happening in the summer. For now, he needs to be getting fit. And then it's my job to try to get both parties, if possible, happy. If one of those parties is not happy, then there are other ways to resolve that. But that's not today the way to talk or to do or to speculate.
Is he happy? Can you see him stay? Because you're not saying for sure whether or not he is going to stay or go.
I don't say anything for sure. There's only one thing sure in life, and that's one day you die. But today he's not happy because he's not playing. He's not recovering. So Paul, if he doesn't play, he's not happy. But I saw him also go back to Manchester United when people didn't think he would have gone back to Manchester United. People tend to forget that. People tend to, let's say, imagine that Manchester United was the only club that he could sign for. It was not the case, eh? He chose Manchester United. Maybe Ferguson didn't like that, but he chose Manchester United. So now, apart from joking, he's happy, and everybody knows that the ambition from both parts is not being met the last years. Let's be honest, let's talk about the elephant in the room. So we need to see in the summer if Paul is still in the plans of Manchester United and if Manchester United is still in the plans of Paul. But I'm not going to speculate around it now.
Do you want to sit down and talk about a new contract?
My job is to listen. God gave me 2 ears and 1 mouth. So maybe better listening sometimes than talking.
What's your relationship like with Manchester United? Mia?
I think it's good. It's a professional, honest relationship. I think that Ed, for what my concerns, I've never spoken to Ola. So I hear he's a fantastic person, a fantastic man. But my relationship with Ed is a transparent and an honestly like, and we tell each other what we like and what we don't like.
There were strong quotes from you last month, though, about not selling and not wanting to give the top players to Manchester United. Do you stand by that?
Well, the quotes were a little bit strong, but I think that what I meant is that Manchester United needs to get their project right, you know, and otherwise it has no sense. And I think that it is what it is. And I don't want to go into that now. I don't want to continue this discussion, you know. It's not important.
But while you're here, you would still deal with it.
I was here for some other things, so I don't want to talk about these other things. I spoke for other things. No, I said what I said.
That's a pretty good interview, actually. I could do it a bit more, you know, Raiola. So I think when he said he is happy towards the end, but after an entire interview, effectively hinting that he's definitely not happy.
And is he basically saying they need to buy a lot of Galacticos for me to be happy, or for Pogba to be happy, or
they need to get the project right? I think is the direct quote.
And and he said we can talk about mention. He said something about an elephant in the room, and basically it was about recruitment, I think.
And how terrible the team are.
But you know, basically, the best players in the world aren't going to join Manchester United at the moment. Like, if you look at Liverpool's recruitment, like, nobody talked about Roberto Firmino before he joined. Like, Salah was seen as a Chelsea failure. Mane, a lot of fans were questioning him, and Andy Robertson had been relegated with Hull. People say, why are you buying him? Like, because that was the level Liverpool were at. They had to be a bit smart, and United have to be now, because you know, they're still playing Alexis Sanchez ridiculous money.
175,000 a week.
Yeah.
I should read this out. Peter and me. Joe, I think you were a huge advocate for appointing Solskjaer full time from memory. Or am I mistaken? No, to be fair, you're not. Like, I definitely thought this thing looks really good and maybe why not? You know, like, Pochettino wasn't quite available then. I didn't see many people across the landscape who were. I definitely, when you were, like, the night they beat PSG, it was hard not to think something special was happening. And maybe that, you know, Rashford and Martial could really flourish under a manager like Solskjaer. So, yeah, no, I was definitely in that cabal.
But I remember that
I'm also not quite sure I would sack him just now. I'm genuinely, it's not going well. It's not going brilliantly. But equally, it's not going, they're 2-0 down to Burnley. Okay, I know. It's not going disastrously either. Like, it's not falling apart around him. And the problem is, because it's not going so well, you then have to wonder, well, does he have the CV to merit real faith? He probably quite doesn't, but I wouldn't get rid of him just yet, I think. But then again, it's very hard not to say, well, Pochettino, of course, would do a better job.
Yeah, but the big issue when he got the job was they announced, like, the talk was about Tony Dyson.
What do I think? Peter and Neith, I don't know what I just said there, but I did at the time. I saw the romanticism / merit at the time, and I'm definitely worried, but I don't know if I'd pull the trigger just yet.
But they jumped the gun. That was the thing. Remember, they announced it was, what was there, 8 to 10 games to go? And why not just
sign them up?
Now why not just wait till the summer and see, as the initial attention was? But they got carried away, and then
we all did, Kieran.
Yeah, I didn't.
When you heard the news, did you think bad idea?
I've thought it all along, yeah. I just think you need more to manage a team of a club of that stature. You need more of a CV.
It seemed to me, geez, they'd gone down the road of CV. Moyes, Van Gaal, Mourinho. Maybe there was a certain...
But they had a chance. Klopp, they had... They spoke to Klopp before.
And Guardiola. They missed the boat in the two of them.
Yeah.
So that was a big mistake. Just to get off the Man United thing. So they're still 2-0 down at home to Burnley, 74 minutes on the clock. We mentioned Troy Parrott at the outset, and we had Mourinho talking about him yesterday, saying, look, he's not ready to lead the line. He might get minutes, but he ain't leading the line. So Damien Delaney was with the lads on OTBAM this morning. He was talking about Parrott, and interestingly, Delaney thinks a loan move would not be beneficial for Parrott and says his manager should know best.
He sees him every day in training, you know, Jose does. So he knows that he's not quite at the level that's required yet. And I think everyone should accept that, you know. And I know people are going to jump on the whole Jose doesn't do youth team players and doesn't promote youth and stuff like that, but he's 17. You know, if he was 19, 20, 21, I might have some sympathy for him, but he's 17. He's going to learn so much from being in and around that Tottenham first team changing room, training every day with them, to see the standards that are required every day in training. He's going to learn so much. And I know a lot of people are saying he should go on loan, but not yet. He's only 17. You know, if you chuck him out on loan, you could ruin him, especially into the Championship. Maybe if he went abroad to Holland or somewhere where the football might be a touch slower and less physical, but I definitely will be sending him into the Championship at 17, because you could ruin him.
Yeah, and I wonder, is kind of part of this as well, Damien, the fact that he's a centre-forward. It's kind of similar to the fact that, say, if he was a central midfielder or a central defender as well, he'd be equally susceptible to being ruined if he went out on loan, that he doesn't, like, say, if he makes an error in a game or if he misses a chance, it's going to be very noticeable, whereas if he was a fullback, if he was a winger, if he played a little bit more on the periphery positionally, he could almost make mistakes at senior level, get away with it, and then learn. If he makes a mistake as a centre-forward, everybody's going to know his name for the wrong reasons almost. I wonder, is that part of it?
Yeah, of course. And I think if he, you know, he could damage his confidence an awful lot if you send him out on loan, because, you know, he's a young guy finding his feet and finding his way. And it's very, very difficult when you go out on loan. All of a sudden, you've got grown men, really, really battle hardened centre backs and centre midfield players could start knocking him around a little bit. Then he misses a couple of chances. And then obviously the eyes of the Irish media are going to be on him if he did go on loan. And that pressure might be too much to put on top of him, because if the loan spell didn't go well, then a lot of people will be like, oh, there it was again, all overhyping Troy Parrott. He's not as good as what he is. Let him develop, because even Pochettino, before he left, he said it's going to be minimum 2 years before he gets in that in my Tottenham team. So Pochettino said that. So it's not just Jose Mourinho. You know, let him develop, let him train, let him get on with his career. And when he turns 19, 20, Tananga, the right back, who Jose said, you know, is a huge gap. There's 3 years between them, 2 years. I know Troy turns 18 very soon, but there's 2 years between them. But 2 years at that age group is huge.
I think it's very sensible, very fair. And interestingly, Jack Byrne today was speaking at the SPAR FAI Primary School Fives programme, and they grew up in the same part of Dublin. They made their first start for their country in a recent friendly, obviously, against New Zealand. So they know each other. And Byrne was saying today, I've talked to him about the situation. Obviously, I can't say exactly what we spoke about, but he's really happy at Spurs. He loves it. He's training with the best players. He's training with one of the best coaches in the world. I probably speak to him every few days, to be honest, not necessarily about football. He has the ability, very confident. I know he's happy. I know he's enjoying himself. So with time, he'll grow into the player that he's meant to be. Everybody finds that level eventually. So that's probably as close to a Troy Parrott kind of statement as we'll get. So that seems all fair enough. And it's not like he's kind of kicked off that Mourinho had that chat with him. By the way, Klopp was talking today, just to round off the news of the day. There was talk of Sevilla and Roma sniffing around Shaqiri, who really doesn't play very much. God love him. He comes on.
He's been injured quite a lot of the season, in fairness.
Fair enough. Then. Yeah. So, you know, Klopp was asked, are you getting rid of anyone? Whatever about signing this January, offloading anybody? And his answer was, majority of December and January, we had a bench full of kids.
Yeah.
Wonderful kids. But kids, so how could we think about giving a player to anybody? I don't understand that. Not about Shaq, it's about everybody. So absolutely nobody leaving Liverpool in January was about the height of the news there. Mm-hmm. Still 2-0, Burnley away to Manchester United are up 2-0, 78 minutes on the clock. Final thoughts from myself and Kieran in just 1 second.
Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Duff and Heskey.
Welcome back. So let's check in at Manchester United. 10 minutes to go. We'll be off air by the time this concludes. So yeah. For all our Man United are in crisis talk, there is every chance they'll win this 3-2 and it'll be celebrations into the night. But Peter Smith is there with 10 minutes to go.
Manchester United 0, Burnley 2. 1962 was the last time Burnley won at this venue. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has made 3 second-half substitutions, but still United can't make any real headway. Daniel James has come closest to scoring for United with an 18-yard bending shot that drifted wide. A one-matter free kick went over the bar. Martial tested Pope. But goals from Chris Wood and G. Rodriguez have Burnley on the verge of that first win here in 58 years. Manchester United 0, Burnley 2.
There we are. So it's either going to be an amazing night for Manchester United or it will stay as they are. Luke Shaw came on, by the way. Jesse Lingard came on. And that was the cavalry at that stage. So 81 minutes on the clock. OTBAM, our daily sports breakfast show, back tomorrow at 7:30. As usual, you can get it all on our social channels. Listen to OTB Sports Radio as well via the Go Loud app. Kieran Donaghy is going to be in studio. He'll probably be talking about the mark. Kieran, I know you mentioned that at the start of the show. So I'm sure Donaghy will have a few thoughts on the mark. Kerry's Tommy Welch on the show as well. And the lads had booked Andy Mitten to talk to even ahead of the game tonight, so they are most certainly talking to Andy Mitten tomorrow, I would think. Tomorrow night, we are back at 7. We're going to have Kilkenny Camogie legend and now manager of the Ballyragget men's team, Anne Downey, on with Nathan. Because of the Rory Best interview tonight, we will have Wednesday Night Rugby tomorrow, if you follow. And then John Giles in studio, where I dare say he may also be talking about Manchester. So it's been Manchester United overload this week. I apologise for that. I appreciate that. I must say I'm relieved that I won't be talking about Manchester United tomorrow. I have nothing more to say on the matter until at least Sunday. Wolves play Liverpool tomorrow as well, which is, well, under different circumstances, if they weren't so far clear, would be a tricky enough banana skin. But it actually doesn't matter if they slip up or
draw.
So
they won't.
Well, that's the other part. We are done. Tom Dunn is going to be on the way. Kieran Cunningham, Chief Sports Writer with the Irish Daily Star. Thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it. And we will talk to you tomorrow morning and then tomorrow night.
Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Duff and Heskey.